ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयं धीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। दैतेया दानवा वत्सम् प्रह्लादम् आसुरा प्रह्लाद आसुराशवम् प्रह्लादम् आसुराशवम् विद्धाया अद्भुतान् क्षीरम् अयपात्रे सुरासवम् दैतेय दानवावत्सम् प्रह्लादम् आसुराशवम् विद्धाया दूतान् क्षीरम् अयपात्रे सुरासवम् दैतेय दानवावत्सम् प्रह्लादम् आसुराशवम् विदाया अदुधान् क्षीरम् अयपात्रे सुरासवम्। वर्ड टू वर्ड मीनिंग दैतेयः द सन्स ऑफ दिति दानवः डीमन्स वत्सम् द काफ प्रह्लादम् प्रह्लाद महाराज असुरा डीमन ऋषभम् द चीफ विधाया मेकिंग अदुधान दे मिल्क डाउट क्षीरम मिल्क आयः आयन पात्रे इन ए पॉट सुरा लिकर आसवम fermented liquids like beer. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The sons of Diti and the demons transformed Prahlad Maharaja, who was born in an Asura family, into a calf, and they extracted various kinds of liquor and beer, which they put into a pot made of iron. Purport. The demons also have their own types of beverages in the form of liquors and beers, just as the demigods use Soma Rasa for their drinking purposes. The demons born of Diti take great pleasure in drinking wine and beer. Even today, people of demoniac nature are very much addicted to liquor and beer. The name of Prahlad Maharaja is very significant in this connection. Because Prahlad Maharaj was born in a family of demons as the son of Hiranyakashipu, by his mercy the demons were and still are able to have their drinks in the form of wine and beer. The word ayaha, iron, is very significant. Whereas the nectarian soma was put in a golden pot, the liquors and beers were put in an iron pot. Because the liquor and beer are inferior, they are placed in an iron pot. And because Somarasa is superior, it is placed in a golden pot. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam वंदेहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजन सहितं कृष्ण चैतन्य देवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादां सहगण ललिता श्री विशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधाकांत नमस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरंगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। इफ द मैन्युफैक्चरर्स ऑफ wine and beer knew about Prahlad Maharaj, they would start praying to him so that their business will flourish. You can see that by his mercy till today, people of a certain nature, of demoniac nature, are enjoying the drinks in the form of wine and beer. Now the holiday season is starting. Government would start to encourage the citizens to do what is called as responsible drinking. They'll ask you to avoid what is called as binge. Is that the right word?
Binge
drinking. And they would encourage the citizens to drink, but responsibly. They have a statistics which I will share. They've done a research of the age group and the drinking patterns. This is from the website named drinkwise.org.au. There's nothing wise in drinking, but there's a website called drinkwise.org.au. It starts with adolescents who are between 16 to 17 years of old. They're in a period of self-discovery. For the minority who are drinking, alcohol is one of the ways available to explore their identity and amplify the experiences of social occasions. This is between 16 to 17 years old. That's when it's starting. Young adults between 18 to 24, they are drinking less overall, employing a tactical approach to alcohol. They are having a tactical approach. They use alcohol in a similar way to other recreational drugs, as a tool in their arsenal of ways to blow off steam and relax during social occasions. Blowing off steam and chilling out. Younger families who have children aged under 13 or under, they are drinking smaller amounts and are always drinking almost in their own homes or at a friend's home. Alcohol allows them to relax, unwind, and cope with the high pressure, hectic lifestyle that comes with young children. So you can see the progression of consciousness. As an adolescent, how much are you drinking? And then when you are a young adult, and then when you got married, the consumption is becoming regular, and the reasons are to cope with the high pressure. The statistics moves on. Older families of children aged above 14 or older, they are rediscovering their identity and freedom as the responsibilities of parenthood begin to taper. For those who are drinking at risky levels, they are returning to parenthood drinking habits. So there are certain drinking habits for adolescents and there are certain drinking habits for the parents. Although today this is a This is primarily in the home. Middle-aged adults, between 40 to 60 year old, especially males, drinking is a well-established and ingrained part of their day-to-day lives, akin to a best mate. For most, heavy drinking is not the norm, and when it does occur, they consider the immediate impact on family and work commitments. For the most part, the long-term health risks of excessive consumption are dismissed. So by the time you reach 40 to 60, wine, beer and all that beverages have become your best mate. Starting from 16 up to 60, the pattern continues. What started off as a period of self-discovery, at the age of 60, it is leading to self-destruction, but still they cannot give it up. Prime reasons in the middle age, the younger families, when the adults are getting married and they're getting transformed into parents, the lifestyle that they desire would make them happy is making them more hectic. They're not able to cope with it and they turn towards alcohol. Why? So that they can forget. So it puts you in a state of forgetfulness. It's a type of illusion that you want to get into and think that it'll all be solved. So excessive material desires, when they are satisfied, it creates greed and you want more and more. So when you are young, you want to party, when your desires are getting fulfilled and you want to party, you want to chill out, you want to relax, the resort is alcohols along with other drugs. Later on, when you reach what you want, you are aspiring, you are seeing people taking up a corporate lifestyle, and you perceive that lifestyle when you are young. And when you reach those goals, and then you get to find a spouse who matches your vibes, then you feel that I've reached my state where I can be happy. Then they realize that they're not able to cope with such a lifestyle which they dreamt of, and again they resort to drinking. So frustration, again they turn towards drinking. So material desires, whether they're getting fulfilled or not, it leads to frustration, and this is the reason why such a thing as wine and beer and all those intoxications exist. Because the living entity wants to forget. If we look at the current context of the verses that are being discussed at the point where different items are getting extracted from Mother Earth and each person is getting transformed into a calf. And at this point what is getting extracted is wine and beer, and who is this person who is acting as a calf and who is used as a medium to extract is Prahlad Maharaj. I had this burning question, why would a person as exalted as Prahlad Maharaj, who we all know is in a very highest platform of bhakti, why is he acting as a calf to extract wine and beer to fulfill the desires of demons? This is the same Prahlad Maharaj who, when he got a little chance during the school break, he started to preach to his fellow students. And then when he was face to face with his father, he is preaching boldly. Tatsadu manye asura varga dehina sada samudvikna diyam asatkada. Straight into the face. Kritvatmapatam Griham Andakupam Vanam Gato Yat Harimashrayeta. My dear father, he praises him, O head of the demons, please give up this lifestyle, go to Vrindavan, chant the glories of the Lord. So that same person at this point, he is engaged in a service to extract wine and beer for his fellow mates. I was listening to senior devotee's lecture where he clarifies his point. He steps back and he asks the question, why is such a thing called intoxication existing in the first place? And this question was actually raised to Prabhupada also. Is wine drinking authorized by God? This is a question by Atreya Rishi Prabhu to Prabhupada. Could it be, Srila Prabhupada, that this sanction of wine drinking be from God? Could that sanction come from God? Do we think this is possible? The context of this conversation is that Prabhupada is having a conversation with another Roman Catholic priest, and Atreya Rishi Prabhu was also with Prabhupada at that point. And the issue of drinking and meat eating is all brought up, and then the sanction of the Lord, why this is created in the first place, and because it's created, it must be consumed. So because God created it, everything God created is good, so we consume what is good and we also become good. What is the problem with that? So I was thinking about a real life example. Say in a university, there are classrooms, there are laboratories, and then there are dustbins and there are toilets. Because the university has given facilities, and because it is provided by the university, I'll spend my whole day in the toilet. Because it's also part of the university, right? It's provided by the university, and I'll sit near the dustbin. Now, they are there for a specific purpose. You use them, but that's not authorized. It's not like wine drinking, and these things are not like, you're not given a unrestricted license to indulge. The Lord knows that when the living entities gets frustrated in fulfilling their material desires, they would want to have some resort to look towards, and they want to forget themselves. At the time, these things are needed. Ultimately, it's a place where we need to get reformed. And when you're getting reformed, you will get sometimes frustrated. And what do you turn towards? You can turn towards spiritual knowledge. That's what the demigods and the sages, they are extracting the spiritual sound, all that. Then the devatas, they are extracting the somarasa. Prabhupada explains about somarasa also. Let's see what Prabhupada answers about that question which is raised about drinking. Prabhupada, we don't find there is a sanction by God to drink. But under certain circumstances, beverages, different types of beverages are allowed, not for intoxication, but for keeping health. That is a different thing. Just like in the moon planet, it is mentioned they drink somarasa. Somarasa is a kind of beverage made from extract of herbs. So because it is very cold there, so they drink that, but not for intoxication. People drink for intoxication. Just like in medicine, so many drugs are used. Even opium is used. Yes, morphia is used, but they are not used ordinarily for a specific purpose. Even a snake poison is used, but that does not mean snake poison should be used perpetually. So for benefit of the body, under particular circumstances, Something may be recommended, but that is not for general use or for intoxication. That is condemned. So here Prabhupada, in his usual style, throws light into the practice of what is being practiced in the society as a norm. He clearly sets aside what is right, what is wrong, and what is somarasa actually. It's an extract from herbs. And he gives real life examples of how snake poison, opium, morphia, all that are also used in the drugs, but in a very, very small quantities. And because it's getting used, doesn't mean we consume in day-to-day life. So that gives an explanation of why things exist. And it is for our own mentality to satisfy that particular desire to get intoxicated and to forget and to turn away from the Lord. These things are there. But still, the question remains as to why Prahlad Maharaj is involved in this. Is he promoting this kind of lifestyle? Is what our great man does, common men follow. And whatever actions he sets, rest of them try to look towards that and then quote examples and then we start following it. So Maharaj explained that the exalted position of Prahlad Maharaj can be understood by the prayers that he is offering to the Lord. If we analyze the prayers that he offers to Lord Narasimhadev, his mood starts from the point where he thinks himself very unqualified. He is standing in the midst of Brahma, Lord Shiva and others, and still he is being asked to glorify the Lord. Brahma daya suragana munayota siddha sattvaikata gatayo vachasam pravahai naraditam purugunai adunapi pibruhu kim toshtum arhati same hare ugra jate. He considers himself as, I am born in a demoniac family. I don't have any qualifications to glorify. So his mood starts out from the point where he thinks himself completely unqualified, but still he says, I will try my best to glorify the Lord to the best of my abilities. So as the prayers progresses, he constantly switches from the point of feeling himself unqualified, and later on he will say that, I am not at all affected by this material nature because I am constantly engaged in thinking and glorifying you. That gives us a point to note that he deals with such people, but he is not getting affected by that, and he himself boldly proclaims it to the Lord. And his inner mindset is also revealed. Prahlad Maharaj says, but I am concerned about those fools and rascals who are taking up this path and they are not trying to rectify themselves. My only concern is for them. I will make sure that I will rectify them and take you close towards you. I don't want to be like certain set of spiritualists who would like to stay in the Himalayas, who don't want to deal with the common public, thinking that they will get polluted. I am not of that category. I want to be with these conditioned souls, preach to them and make sure that they reach your lotus feet. That's why I am here. He says, at one stage you see that the same Prahlad Maharaj who said, I am not qualified, and he himself will say that my senses are dragging me in different directions. My eyes are going somewhere. My tongue wants to taste abominable things, such a low person as me. And then later on in the prayer he says, I am not affected because I am absorbed in your thoughts and in your glorification. And he is concerned about the well-being of others. Turning to some real-life examples, patients go to the hospital. The qualified doctors also go to hospital, but because both are going to the same place, doesn't mean that they are both are afflicted. One is going to cure, get the cure, and one is going to do the cure. He is going to administer the medicine and he is going to cure the people. So here, Prahlad Maharaj's stance is that he is doing it as a matter of duty, where he has to take care of the demons, and demons have a certain kind of a need, although internally he doesn't want them to be in that lifestyle. He does not stop them straight away. In Bhagavad Gita also Krishna explains, so as not to disrupt the minds of those who are attached to fruitive activities, the person should not stop them. But one should gradually engage them in spiritual practices and then elevate them. Let's go back to the scenario of Prahlad Maharaj teaching to his classmates. That was a short period that he got, and he was under the control of a lot of superiors. Even in that short time, he started to preach to his fellow students. And there he started to reveal how he got this knowledge from his fellow mates. Are asking, we're all demons, and how are you speaking spirituality? Where did you get this from? Prahlad Maharaj explains that section, Signs of God, in Canto 7. He says, I learned this from Narad Muni when I was in my mother's womb. And in that section, he says that even those who have demoniac qualities like us can be purified by worshipping the Lord. So that actually reminded me of another verse from Bhagavatam, where the power of the holy name, and then the power of devotee association, and then the power of worship is being described in terms of how unqualified a person can be, he still can get elevated. This is from 2nd Canto, 4th chapter, 18th verse, where this verse translation lists a set of races who are addicted to sinful activities. Kirata, Huna, Andhra, Pulinda, Pulkasha, Abira, Shumba, Yavana, members of Kasha races, and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Due to His being the supreme power, I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Kirata, Hunandra, Pulinda, Pulkasha, Abira, Shumba, Yavana, Kashadaya, E Anye, Chapapa, Yad Apashrayashraya. That word Apashrayashraya is very significant, because that means you are taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord. Apashrayashraya. Then the result of that is, you see the contrast, where you are coming from such a background which is very degraded. But then if you come in contact with a devotee, apashrayashrayaha, what you become is, you become purified. Sudyanti tasmai. You become at once purified. And why the devotees are powerful? Because they are constantly worshipping the feet of the Lord, who is called as Prabha Vishnave, the powerful Vishnu. So in that section, in that purport to that particular verse, Prabhupada writes powerful points. The Lord is trying to change the heart of the conditioned souls, but He is acting through the agent of His pure devotees. Prabhupada says that for this purpose only, this ISKCON is existing. It appears that instead of running a godless civilization in the present context of the world civilization, if the leadership of world affairs is entrusted to devotees of the Lord, for which a worldwide organization under the name and style of International Society for Krishna Consciousness has already been started, then by the grace of Almighty Lord, there can be a thorough change in the heart of human beings all over the world. Here's an important point. Because the devotees of the Lord are able authorities to affect such a change by purifying the dust-worn minds of the people in general. So the purpose is being brought out as to how devotees are acting as an agents of the Lord, and their purpose is to change or purify the hearts of people who are downtrodden. In that particular purport, Prabhupada brings about the power of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is powerful enough to turn into a Vaishnava, even a Kirata, etc., as mentioned above. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated by the Lord that there is no bar to becoming a devotee of the Lord, even for those who are low-born women, Sudras or Vaishyas, and by becoming a devotee, everyone is eligible to return home back to Godhead. So the power of Vaishnava is being brought out, that by his association he can turn others into Vaishnavas even though they are from very degraded platform like Kirata, Muna, Andhra, Pulinda, Pulkasha, all that. Though a person, even the most sinful man, he at once becomes purified by systematic contact with a pure Vaishnava. Prabhupada uses the word very powerfully. A systematic contact with a pure Vaishnava can purify the most sinful person. Where do we get that such systematic association with Vaishnava? Is through our International Society of Krishna Consciousness, started by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. So because the Vaishnava has got such a power, and who is the Vaishnava we are talking about at the moment? Who is transforming the hearts of the other demons? Prahlad Maharaj. So, he is there not to encourage the lifestyle of the demons, but he is there to give them systematic contact. And imagine that same Prahlad Maharaj, who had a very short break in the classroom and who was under the superiors. He was at that time in a junior position. Imagine that same Prahlad Maharaj now is put on throne, and he has got all the power, and he is now a king, and nobody can restrict. What will he do? What kind of propagation he will start doing for such demoniac people? We can imagine. There will be constant Bhagavatam classes, and there will be constant glorification of the Lord. And he will be giving his constant association, even though as a matter of duty he has to go and extract some wine and beer for his demons. He is doing it as a matter of duty, not that he is getting or he is encouraging that kind of a lifestyle. Slowly such demons, Asura Varga, they will also become purified by his systematic contact. You can imagine how much he would be, his whole race, he would transform them into devotees of the Lord. So that kind of answered my point about why he is doing it, and will he not get affected, and what will happen to them. So as devotees, we don't have to worry about drinking wine and beer, but we still have to drink something. What are some of the devotional practices that are considered as drinking? If you can come up with some points. What are some of the devotional practices that are equated to drinking? A lot of times we hear, even in spiritual circles, there are drinking. And there's a picture behind me where exalted Lord Balaram is also intoxicated. How does devotees get intoxicated? Any thoughts? here on the, what is it, holy name. But we may not have that taste to become intoxicated in the holy name. Any other devotee equivalent of intoxication? Any thoughts on that? One is holy name. Yes, it's very highly exalted. Position? Sorry? Karuni. Okay. Prasadam. Ambrosia. Ambrosia. Okay. And I'm talking about devotees getting intoxicated. Srimad Bhagavatam class. You're getting intoxicated. So that's why all the material miseries go away, then the person relaxes. And when the person relaxes, what happens? He sleeps. Yes.
Harina.
Harina. Yeah. So the aspect of getting intoxicated still remains, but then the means of getting intoxicated changes. I was recently looking at a video which describes why people get addicted to sugar. This point of Varuni was brought out. Although in the spiritual world, Varuni is, I don't know, daughter of Varuna. And she wanted to give pleasure to Lord Balaram, and that's why she appeared. And in that particular pastime, where Lord Balaram has his own set of gopis and he's enjoying, Varuni kind of adds to the rasa of the, more flavor to the pastime. But coming back to Varuni that we make, or excessive attachment to sugar, the research was showing that each person, when they're turning to sugar, they're looking for an emotional fulfillment that's not available elsewhere, which is available in sugar. And they think that by consuming sugar or anything sweet, they will fill that emptiness which is inside them. So when we are brought up when you're young, the idea of any social occasions or anything to celebrate, what comes up is sweet. Okay, if I have to celebrate, there must be some sweets in it, in the whole occasion or all that. And then if I'm feeling really down and depressed, or maybe I'll have a cup of ice cream or treat myself with a bar of chocolate. So then that external fulfillment that you're looking for, you're not able to do that, then you're turning to something. The internal fulfillment that you're looking for is not available, that's why you're turning towards something external. And then food and sugar especially gives that kind of a relief, and you tend to go towards it, and then it becomes like a habit. So in a similar way, in devotional life, when we're looking for that internal fulfillment, the process offers various flavors, as you all pointed out, holy name, Harinam, hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam. And at this point, many exalted devotees are engaged in distributing books where they forget time and all that. They go beyond all that, and they are tasting a great amount of nectar, for which they are able to go through so much of austerities. So the bhakti process also gives us a lot of avenues for us to get intoxicated. One of them is Bhagavatam describes itself, how devotees hear and the nectar goes through their ears. Vibhantiye Bhagavata Atmanasatam. They are drinking the Bhagavatam through their ears. Katamritam Shravana Puteshu Samritam. It's a nectar of the pastimes of the Lord, and that goes inside. Shravana Puteshu Samritam. Punantite Vishaya Vidushitashayam. So, Vrajantitat Sarana Saroru Hantikam. So, you're drinking that That nectar that you're drinking through your ears transforms your heart. How do we explain this to a common person? That hearing a sound vibration transforms you and then your consciousness gets affected. That's why when we hear the passing of the Lord, what happens internally, that sound vibration has a strong effect on your consciousness. And because it is a spiritual sound vibration, it is molding your consciousness by taking away that which is unnecessary. That's what we sing in the beginning. Hridayantastho hi avadhrani. All the dirt is getting cleansed. So that sound vibration is, you may think, oh, year after year I'm hearing nothing is happening, but no, internally your subtle body is getting transformed. And naturally, when your subtle body is more transformed, your external body will also act accordingly or change accordingly. So this is how, when we have to explain it to people about the significance of hearing, what do you guys do every day? Go and hear some religious talk, what's in it? Isn't that a waste of time? No, it is an investment of time so that I have a strong foundation where I am able to keep my consciousness clear so that I can go back and do my occupational duties. It has a strong effect on the person's consciousness, so it is a transformative process and it takes time. So that is one kind of a nectar that is coming through this constant hearing. One may ask, what if I don't have the taste for hearing? Then it's recommended that you serve a person who has got the taste. Shushrushro shraddhadanasya vasudeva katharuchi. What if I don't have vasudeva katharuchi? What if I don't have the taste to hear? Vasudeva katharuchi. Shushrushro shraddhadanasya vasudeva katharuchi. Yeah, we'll have to serve those who have the taste. So, the second chapter of first canto of Bhagavatam describes that you serve those who have the taste, then you will end up getting the taste. So, we'll discuss the other few intoxication avenues for devotees. One is the worship, which is getting offered to the deities. So we covered one, which is glorification, which is here through Srimad Bhagavatam. Then other is the worship. One may feel that I'm not going to the altar and doing the whole worship. And how will I get the benefit? The process is so powerful that anyone who is carefully observing what's going on during the worship and putting his heart and mind into it, he gets the same benefit. So, glorification of the Lord is one kind of intoxication. Worshipping the deities is another kind of intoxication. The holy name is being brought up. Meditating on the holy name, hearing the sound. Listening to divine pastimes. And the fifth one is offering obeisances. So these are the five kind of nectars which are listed by Raghunath Das Goswami. Worshipping, glorification, meditation, listening to divine pastimes and offering obeisances. Now if you carefully observe, our founder Acharya has very tactfully put all of them in our daily morning routine. Can you do the mapping? When do we do the meditation? Okay, let's start. Morning we have Mangalarati. What happens? What nectar are you getting based on what I've said? Worship. I said Mangalarati. Guru Ashtakam. So we sing Guru Ashtakam. So daily worship is going on. Glorification of the spiritual master is also happening. Then you are, in fact, if you read Guru Ashtakam, you are listening to the divine pastimes. Sri Radhika Madhavayura Para Madhurya Leela. So then the spiritual master is a confidential servant of the divine couple. So he is in such an exalted position and we are glorifying him. So we are glorifying and we are doing worship. And what do we do as soon as we enter the temple? We pay obeisances. Thank you. You see how Srila Prabhupada has put all the teachings of Goswamis in a way which is accessible to us. And we are kind of positively programmed by this morning program. We come in, we pay obeisances to Prabhupada, we come in, we pay obeisances to the deities. Then we start getting into the process of Mangalarti, we sing. But in the background, this is what is happening. Your subtle body is getting slowly and slowly transformed. Once we know, once the intelligence is sufficiently satisfied why we are doing things, so then you will get more motivation to do things. Okay, let's continue. Then, after Mangalarti finishes, we do Tulsi Puja, again, worship, glorification. Even Tulsi Aarti is very powerful in that sense. And after that, what do we do? After Tulsi Aarti, we pay respects to each other. By paying respects to Vaishnavas in the morning program is one of the crucial part. One devotee in Chaupati was telling that the best part of the morning program is paying respects to all the Vaishnavas. In our day-to-day dealings with other devotees, we may unintentionally commit some offenses. Or intentionally also. But the intention has to change. The aspect of begging forgiveness when all the Vaishnavas are there in that mood, that will help us to overcome the obstacle of the nectar of the holy name, that intoxication to take over. One of the major blocks is offenses to devotees. So the morning program, one of the crucial part is paying respects to other Vaishnavas. I encourage devotees to take that part also a bit more seriously. After paying obeisances, you can, doing the Vaishnava pranams, you can go out and chant. So that's what happens. After that we start chanting. The chanting is when the meditation happens. We are doing japa meditation. So we are meditating on the sound vibration. And because we have taken nice darshan, whatever we are exposing ourselves to, that's going to come up in our mind when we are chanting. Then chanting, and after that, as Hanuman Prabhu said, Guru Puja, again, worshipping, glorifying. Srila Prabhupada, and then we again do the Kirtan, Guru Puja Kirtan, and after that we glorify, we do normal Kirtan to the Lordships. We sing Prabhupada's Pranam Mantra, Panchatattva Mantra, then the Hare Krishna Mantra. And after that we have Bhagavatam class, which is again glorification of the Lord. We are discussing divine pastimes. And then after Bhagavatam class, naturally, followed by Mahaprasade Govinde. So that is another type of nectar. So in this way, devotees also have an avenue to get themselves intoxicated. So the appreciation for what Srila Prabhupada has done increases the moment we start to see how he has put all the teachings of the Goswamis in a way that is accessible to us. So with that glorification of Srila Prabhupada, I'll end here. I'll see if there are any questions related to what we discussed today.
How do obeisances improve the consciousness?
How does obeisances improve consciousness? You are actually putting yourself in a humble position and you are treating others to be more superior. So in that sense, it brings in the natural quality of not expecting respect and giving respect to others. And that makes you favorable for chanting the holy name. So that's what I feel. Others can add if they want to. Yes.
Just adding to that, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita,
yeah.
Out of the four things, one of the things is
their wishes.
So by just doing that, directly, obeying Krishna's instruction and
by paying obeisances, we are obeying Krishna's instructions in his words, Manmana Bhava Madhutto. Atyaji Vam Namaskuru. Anything else? Yes.
If you go to the next class, my question is, first, you very explicitly, very nicely explain why Prahlad Maharaj decide to take the form by which the beer and the alcohol was produced. I wanted to ask you, in all the previous verses in this canto, the kaph has been used to produce wonderful different nectars, the Braspati, the Indra. But this is the only instance where the kaph has been used to produce the beer and alcohol. Because kaph is supposed to give only things that is in addition to our body.
Right?
So why the kaph is used in this case?
Why is the calf being used as a medium to extract beer and alcohol? In the previous purpose, Prabhupada explains that Mother Earth herself gives the suggestion to bring the calf so that she can give things which every person needs. So she starts to give that. So I am the form of a cow and I'll be more pleased if I see a calf and then I can start giving milk. So based on that instruction, Prithu Maharaj initially transforms Swayambhu Manu into a calf. Now according to each person's need, that gets drawn out. Here as such, Prahlad Maharaj is getting those beer and wine. And then he's going to give it to his demon. So it's not that the calf is giving something which is detrimental to someone's health, but here the personalities themselves are acting as calf to extract it from Mother Earth. And here, because Prahlad Maharaj is given that role by the Lord to manage the demons, he has to do it as a matter of duty. He is doing it. So I don't feel that the calf as it is giving something which is poisonous, but it's the personalities themselves do it. Later on, I think Lord Shiva will extract, I don't know, blood and things like drinks which are based on that. Yeah. So, because even then we understand he doesn't get affected by it, but he is dealing with such people. So, yeah, so that's why I felt it's similar to what Lord Shiva or Prahlad Maharaj, they are all Mahajans, so they can handle that kind of situation and still be Krishna conscious. That actually reminds me of an interesting point about how those who are in the position of caretakers and who are in the position where they have people under them and they have to fulfill the needs of different categories of people under them, they should also be careful that when they are trying to fulfill the needs of their subordinates, they shouldn't be overcome by their own lower nature. Because if you are not as strong as Prahlad Maharaj or Lord Shiva, Prabhupada explains that people try to imitate Lord Shiva by taking all those intoxicants. So that's from the point of view of you acting as a person who has to fulfill the needs of others. especially from preaching point of view, sometimes we do the bridge preaching where we have to be with them, be with their kind of, and go to places which we normally don't go. So at that time, we just have to be more spiritually strong so that we don't get swayed by that kind of a lower nature. Unless we are strong, we shouldn't be taking that role of bringing such people of lower consciousness if we ourselves are not strong. And if we have to do it, then we need to take extra spiritual precaution before you go in and do that kind of spiritual activity. It was something that I thought. Your question?
Actually, I'm wondering, chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, they said, oh, yeah, you know, the mind is so present because you're mentioning about chanting and, you know, the preparation. Sometimes, but, you know, we are trying to tame the mind, but, you know, the mind is, like, where the mind is a child, so we, so rather than we saying that the, when we think that the mind is not a child, we should treat it as a child instead of the other way around, that we are getting treated by the mind as a child. So, how do we put that in perspective when we are chanting, and if we are not able to do that, and if our chanting is not, it's more mechanical in that sense, how are we still getting the same
nectar? So for as far as chanting is concerned, the mind makes us like a child and we are like a child in the hands of the mind. So how do we make the mind helpful in the chanting? So for me, His Grace Gurujan Prabhu's guidelines for chanting kind of helps me a lot to start from the very basics of, if the mind is so disturbed, Prabhu mentions, at least try to hear one mantra or at least one word. He deals with that scenario where it's an extreme scenario where the mind is acting like as your enemy and it's not allowing you to listen. Then Prabhu says, at least try to listen to one word, one Hare or one Rama or one Krishna at least. So then he says that will actually pacify slowly. It is a process by detachment and by constant practice. Now I can share after the class as a whole set of things which Sachinandan Maharaj has given, techniques, how to align your body, mind and heart for chanting. Prabhupada's instruction about just hear. Now, for us to come to the platform of just hearing, before we chant, if we come to the conscious effort that the next 2 hours I'm going to chant, I'm going to have a constant, have a positive mindset, say, I've come back from office, a typical worst day, I've got so many things to do. When I was working, I wouldn't even take off my formal dress. I would just have the bead bag in my pocket and then chant off my rounds, which is like getting it done. Now what that is a detrimental thing there is, you are still in the same attire, you're carrying the whole consciousness. What if you break that pattern and then you come home, it's a simple step like take a shower, put on devotional clothing, change the attire, and you create the atmosphere which is conducive for you to chant. That responsibility is with us. Because other senior devotees can give us tools, tips, techniques, but lifestyle change is something that we have to make. So depending on how, what kind of issues you face, accordingly, you may have to find solutions. One thing that worked is for me is taking darshan of the deities before chanting. That's why in the morning program, Mangalarti is there where you take darshan of the deities. The more you see them, the more likely that that form will appear when you're chanting. So what if I can't come to temple and I have to chant. So let's go back to the scenario of a worst case day. You had a worst day at work. You come back, take shower. You spend 5 minutes at least sitting in your 2 to 3 minutes or 5 minutes, is up to you. Sitting in front of your home altar, just gazing at the Prabhupada's picture and all the pictures that you have. So that creates the next 1 hour you're going to chant. If you have done it in your same formal dress, without taking a bath, without clearing your consciousness, that's what is going to come up. Because whatever hits your false ego, mind brings it up when you're chanting. Oh, he said that, he did that, it shouldn't be done. Guruji Prabhu writes it. So to mind tries to defend the false ego, defend yourself, so that a lot of things will be brought up. But if you're clearing your consciousness, taking that conscious step of, yes, I have to face a formidable challenge of chanting my rounds, and it's not going to be easy. You expect it. And then you take the help of Guru and Krishna by having some spiritual, like Bhaktivedanta Maharaj said, like a spiritual warrior has to have different weapons in his arsenal sometimes to defend himself. So this is like you're protecting yourself. So for the next 1 hour I have to chant, so I'll spend 5 minutes to clear my consciousness. And by taking the help of the form of the Lord, looking at it. For some, it could be listening to a kirtan for 5 minutes. You may think, oh, already I don't have time, why should I spend time in preparation? No, that 5 minutes of preparation will make sure that 1 hour, 1.5 hour of chanting will go well. So, you need to find out what inspires you the most within devotional practices. For me, seeing the deities of Ayur, it could be kirtan, whatever it is, you have to do that internal thing. Do that for some, reading a verse from Gita, that will help them come out of that material consciousness. So, do that and then start the chanting. And then there are few tips and techniques you can use. So, hope that helps. Thank you. We'll end here. Grantharasya Mat Bhagavatam Jaya Shila Prabhupada Jaya.